Chapter 2, Zodiac Heart Attack. My ears went completely silent, as if I'd sunk to the bottom of the deep end in a 10-foot swimming pool. The 9mm pistol we were using to shoot halibut after getting them alongside the boat suddenly discharged less than 2 feet away from my head, and just missed puncturing the side of the inflatable Zodiac raft we were fishing in by less than 1 inch. That might not have been a big deal had we been fishing in July in the lower 48, but this happened about 5 miles out in Cook Inlet, Alaska, where the water temperature was cold enough to cause hypothermia in a matter of minutes and certain death in about 30. Just as my friend Wade was about to pull the trigger to shoot the large halibut, an unexpected huge wave hit the boat from behind and caused the fish to swing towards the Zodiac. At the same time, the front end of the boat kicked toward the halibut, causing the firearm to discharge before he was ready. The two of us just looked at each other, both realizing at the same moment how close we'd just come to becoming the ocean's deadliest catch. The day before, we launched our 13-foot Zodiac with a 25-horse Yamaha into the pounding surf out of Deep Creek, Alaska. Other commercial fishing boats were being launched by huge alien-looking machines called skidders from the logging industry into the smashing waves and then heading some 12 to 15 miles out to sea to their favorite fishing spots, loaded with groups of fishermen paying about $250 apiece in hopes of catching a couple of 100-pound halibut on rented poles that they could have their picture taken with while wearing their designer fishing outfits they also paid a couple of $100 for, probably never to be worn again. But that picture will hang over their office desk for years to come, and they'll remember just how much they hate their jobs and how much they'd rather be out having the adventure of a lifetime. As we pushed our Navy SEAL-looking Zodiac into the surf, we fired up the motor, angled the nose into the oncoming waves, and skipped the motorized raft toward the smoking volcano, some 26 miles straight across the frigid moving waters of Cook Inlet. We dropped anchor for the first time only 3 miles from shore. The tide was slack and the 16-ounce sinkers quickly found the bottom of the ocean in about 60 feet of water. Within 30 minutes, I landed my first day's halibut and could only imagine what other huge fish lay at the bottom somewhere in the murky depths below us. As we had been placing the halibut on the stringer and getting our lines readied and baited, the tide had been picking up speed with incredible force. I was bent over, getting some squid out of the cooler, when the anchor I thought was securely wedged on the ocean bottom suddenly and violently caught in a group of rocks, thrusting the nose of the boat down and into the oncoming 8-foot wave. Had this been an aluminum riverboat, we'd have been in the drink on the count of two, but the inflatable Zodiac, rope stretched taut, pulled through the wave and bounced back up like letting go of a beach ball from under the water. The next thing I saw were the black wooden floorboards at the opposite end of the Zodiac pressed against my nose as the forceful wave had thrown me from one end of the boat to the other. My first thought was, did a whale just grab our anchor rope? I quickly scrambled back to the front of the boat to try and untie the anchor rope as we didn't have enough rope let out to keep the angle of the boat from pulling us straight down and into the riptide. The tide was so strong and the anchor was so securely lodged, there was nothing I could do to get it to budge. As I pulled on the rope to move the raft forward, another wave suddenly hit us and pinned my hands between the nylon anchor rope and the nose of the boat. Had I not had on heavy rubber gloves, the skin on my hand certainly would have been stripped off like that of the fish we would fillet later that evening. Somehow, the anchor let loose, and we were able to let out more rope and get back to fishing. Within an hour, I hooked what I thought must be a 150-pound halibut. I fought that fish on a 130-pound test line for what seemed like an eternity. As I looked into the waters below the tip of my halibut pole, I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. About 3/4 of a mile away, coming straight at us, was an extremely large commercial boat about 100 yards in length. Now, 3/4 of a mile away may seem like a long way out, but when moving with Cook Inlet's powerful tides, the distance can be covered in a matter of minutes. I still hadn't been able to bring the fish close enough to the boat to tell what it was, but we knew that it had better surface and like right now, or that boat would be on us before we could get our anchor rope pulled up. What should have been happening was that commercial boat was required by law to give the anchored boat the right of way. The problem was, it hadn't seen us. About the time we were seriously contemplating cutting the fishing line, we began to see a dark, looming figure begin to emerge from underneath the boat. About the time we got our first glimpse of the mass of fish, it caught sight of our boat, sending the fish back towards the bottom and the drag on my reel screaming for mercy. Thinking the boat would surely change its course, and also thinking we had a world record halibut on, we continued to fight the large fish. Slowly, the fight began to go out of the fish, and I quickly began reeling it in toward the Zodiac. When the huge fish got within about 7 feet of the surface, we realized that what we'd caught was not a huge halibut, but instead a massive skate that resembled a stingray, and not something we were interested in keeping. As I raised my head to tell Wade that it wasn't a halibut, he wasn't looking at the fish at all. He was looking at the massive ship, now only a quarter of a mile away and coming fast. If we didn't move, that ship would crush us in a matter of minutes. Wade began to feverishly pull the anchor rope up as I reached over the side of the boat to cut the line. It was going to be close. At the last possible second, the giant oncoming ship changed its course and veered to our left. The wake of the vessel threw our tiny raft around like a child's toy boat in a bathtub. All we could do was ride the waves out, as trying to speed out of there would have resulted in capsizing our boat. We decided we had enough adventure for one day, so we secured the anchor, our hooks and our poles, and headed back toward the shore. As we approached the beach, I was never so happy to set my feet on dry land, and we ended the day with cooking fresh halibut over a portable gas stove, along with some potatoes and onions in an open fire pit. There's no restaurant on earth I'd rather eat at than at Mother Nature's table. The next morning, we made a quick run to the local Walmart, a local 800-square-foot one-stop shopping plaza made out of an old fishing lodge, picked up some more bait, a couple of 20-ounce sinkers, and a new O-ring for our secondary gas can. The can had been leaking gasoline, and was now only about half full. One thing you can't chance is running out of gasoline miles out into the inlet. You could be pulled out to sea by the tides, and they'd find you about 6 months later washing up on some Japanese beach. Well, after filling up our gas tank with $6 per gallon gasoline, we headed back to camp, loaded up the Zodiac again, and launched this time into Deep Creek. Now, Deep Creek is a great salmon stream, but it can go from being almost bone dry to over your head in just a couple of hours. Wade tells a story about a time he was there when some young guy from the lower 48, wanting to prove he could cross the creek in his souped-up four-wheel drive, flooded his engine trying to cross a spot a little deeper than he thought. He got out, took his keys, and hitched a ride into town to find a tow truck to come help pull him out. When the young gun returned several hours later, the only thing he found was a buoy, floating on the top of the water that a local fisherman had tied onto it so he could find it when he returned. Like I said, Alaska can eat your lunch in a heartbeat if you're not watching. As we came out of the mouth of Deep Creek, the waves suddenly tripled in size as the creek flows across a delta for about a quarter of a mile and then drops off abruptly to about 60 feet. In that very spot, my friend and his wife rescued several fishermen 22 years prior whose boat had capsized in the bone-chilling waters. At the time, they were in a 17-foot Zodiac, which was 4 feet longer than the one we were currently in. That extra 4 feet gave them more stability on the huge waves. We weren't too worried about the waves this day, as the waters were pretty calm, and there were halibut to be caught. For the next 4 hours, we fished the downside of high tide until the tides went slack. We hadn't been catching much, and so we decided to move out into the inlet a couple of more miles. After about 30 minutes of fishing in a new spot, Wade hooked what we thought was a monster. It ended up being another skate that was truly half the size of our boat. When they decide they don't want to be caught, they just open up their water wings and head straight for the bottom, and all you can do is hold on for the ride. I think the thing that's exciting about fishing ocean waters is that you just never know what might grab a hold of your line. About the time Wade got that skate off his line, I noticed three commercial fishing boats headed into shore. I really should have been paying more attention to why they might have been headed in, but at the time, I had hooked a 5-foot sand shark and was busy reeling him in. As the minutes turned into hours, the tides began to change, the winds were picking up, and the current was going back out to sea. And so were we. Our anchor had come undone again, and we were ripping right along with the current. If there's one thing I've learned about Alaska, it's that the weather can change drastically and swallow you whole if you're not paying attention. On the other side of the inlet, there were dark looming clouds beginning to wrap their arms around one of Alaska's giant volcanoes, and entire mountain ranges were beginning to evaporate from sight. On the count of one, we pulled anchor and began to make the trek back to Deep Creek in hopes of hitting the mouth of the inlet before low tide and avoid the wrath of the oncoming storm. We hadn't gone a mile when the waves began to get so large from the winds that we couldn't see the shore every time we hit the trough of a large wave. Some of the waves were so large that the Zodiac literally fell off the top of the wave in a free fall as coolers, fishing poles, spare gas cans, and halibut floated 3 feet above the boat, only to come crashing down several feet from their original location. This was no longer my idea of fun. In smooth waters, a Zodiac can get up on step and fly across the water like a rocket. We were just barely idling, just trying to keep the boat from capsizing as we crawled toward shore. As we got within a half a mile of shore, we could see the 150-foot cliffs that surround the mouth of Deep Creek. This was going to be a real shot in the dark to try and find the creek's mouth and get into its safe haven. We were only going to get one shot at this because of the strong rip tides and the enormous waves that were now pounding one after another in rapid succession. If you have to turn around in that delta, chances are you're going into the drink. Well, our tiny Zodiac was beginning to get thrashed. I was praying out loud to God to watch over our boat, and no matter what, to increase my faith. You know, the funny thing was, I really wasn't afraid. Situations like that will force your faith life into the open, and if you live through them, will increase your faith. Wade shouted out to me to let go of the rope I was desperately clinging on to and make my way to the front of the boat, as once we hit the shallows, I'd need to keep an eye out for shallow water, because if you run aground in this deadly surf, it is next to impossible to get the boat turned and back into deep water. One wrong step off the boat to dislodge it from the shallows, and either the current will pull you under and out to sea, or the next 100 waves will pound you against the rocky bottom as you try and come up for air. If this goes south, you'll be food for the flocks of seagulls waiting on the shore for their next meal, and nobody can do anything about it. Before I could grasp an oar to measure the water depth, our motor suddenly hit bottom, and the forward momentum of the boat stopped us right now. Before we knew what was happening, the first of many waves began crashing over the top of the boat, sending our gear flying through the air. There was only one choice. We both had to jump out of the boat, still a quarter of a mile from shore, and try and get the boat turned around and put back out to sea. Human instinct sees the shore ahead of you and urges you to push forward toward the beach. Had we done that, we would have died, no question. The choice we had to make was to get the boat spun back around and push the nose right into the oncoming waves so that we could go with the current, right back into the mouth of the storm, but survivable. Well, that's just what we did. With the waves crashing down on top of us, we got the boat turned around and pointing back out to sea. With every wave we hit, the front of the boat pointed straight up and into the air at a 45-degree angle, and then plummeted to the bottom of the next wave until we got out of harm's way. About 30 minutes later, we ended up ditching the boat about a half mile away, but in a spot where we were able to get out of the boat without the fear of drowning. As we climbed out of the boat, the water was almost flush to the top of the Zodiac, and it still floated. No other type of boat could have survived our predicament. And any other decision we would have made to try and get out of our circumstance prematurely would have led to certain death. Well, that night, as I lay in my sleeping bag, listening to the rain and the wind pound our tent, I was never so thankful to be back on dry land. I kept thinking about our week and the trials we'd faced, and the Holy Spirit brought a verse to mind. Consider it a sheer gift, friends, when tests and challenges come at you from all sides. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try and get out of anything prematurely. Let it do its work so that you become mature and well-developed, not deficient in any way. If you don't know what you're doing, pray to the Father. He loves to help. You'll get His help and won't be condescended to when you ask for it. Ask boldly, believing without a second thought. People who worry their prayers are like wind-whipped waves. Don't think you're going to get anything from the Master that way, adrift at sea, keeping all your options open. Before I turned out the lantern and closed my eyes for the night, I finished my reading a few verses later with this. Anyone who meets a testing challenge head on and manages to stick it out is mighty fortunate. For such persons loyally in love with God, the reward is life and more life.
Gospel of Christ is the power of the Father. It's the holy word of life. So I can sail through stormy waters, for the labor's not in vain. Because to live would be Christ Jesus, but to die would be gain.